This podcast is intended for investment professionals only. All investing involves risk.
Hello and welcome to another episode of L&G Talks Asset Management. I'm Nick Jardine, content manager for L&G's private markets platform. Today, we'll be turning our attention to Europe and its energy transition goals. It's no secret that the continent has ambitious emissions reduction targets and has, for some time, offered a continually supportive regulatory backdrop to facilitate a transition to clean power. The investments needed here are vast, while the scale and pace of change required may seem daunting. Where there's a challenge, however, there's also opportunity. I'm delighted to be joined today by Rashim Magakian, CEO of NTR. L&G and NTR have had a strategic partnership since 2015, and L&G was a cornerstone investor in NTR's first two funds. Together, we subsequently launched a third fund focusing on clean power in Europe. Rosh, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks, Nick.
First and foremost, for listeners who aren't familiar, I was wondering if you could perhaps give a quick overview of NTR, who you are, what you do, and importantly, why you do it.
Hey, Nick, thanks again for inviting me to join. So look, NTR has been around for quite a long time, actually over 40 years. But in the last 25 years, we have been focusing specifically on the energy transition. We've been doing it in Europe and in the US. And since we joined with our strategic partnership with L&G, we've been focusing solely on the European energy transition. So by that, I mean investments and asset management in areas such as clean power, storage, associated grid structures, and so on. So today we have projects in around 70 locations around Western Europe in about 7 countries. We have an in-house team that develops, builds, and optimizes the performance of these energy transition assets, whether it's, for example, power, storage, and so on. So the way I like to describe ourselves in NTR is we're an organization that can deliver large projects that involve electrons.
Excellent. Thanks for that, Rosh. So I mentioned in my introduction Europe's clean power transition ambitions and the supportive regulatory backdrop on the continent. And I'll ask you in a moment about the targets that Europe set. But maybe we could just step back and discuss why Europe has these ambitions for this clean power transition. And I think I'm right in saying it's not just about decarbonisation.
Look, you're absolutely right, Nick. I mean, of course, decarbonisation is core and central to Europe's policy and plans, and it's well recognised that about 2/3 of Europe's decarbonisation targets are going to come from either clean power or electrification of things such as heat and transportation, which ultimately needs clean power to do that. So that's well understood. But it's not just about that. There are other main fundamentals as well. The first is, actually, there's a growth in demand for power. That wasn't necessarily the case a few years ago. But as we look ahead to all the requirements for power in things such as electrifying transport, such as the addition of data centers onto our wires and so on, there's actually going to be about a 10% growth between now and 2030 in power, which is the equivalent of adding Italy onto the wires in across the whole of Europe. So that's fundamental number one. The second, which obviously is, I suppose, more challenging for Europe too, is the geopolitical need for energy security. So we have been, and it's well documented, very reliant on Russian gas in the past. Europe is clearly saying, as a result of what's happened geopolitically there, that, look, we need to pull back from that interdependence on gas from Russia. And whilst there are immediate plans to bring in backups such as liquefied natural gas, Europe is recognizing we can't rely on other geopolitical regions in the world. We need to come up with our own plans. And if you take a look around Europe, we don't actually have a lot of gas or oil in Europe itself, but what we do have is plenty of rain, plenty of wind, and plenty of sun, which ultimately points to clean power as being a very viable and important alternative to the original thermal power. And then thirdly, it's not just that we have that resource in terms of sun, wind and rain, but actually clean power itself is the most affordable source of power and it is the quickest to deploy. So we've got to get it into the ground and we've got to do it quickly and affordably. And clean power meets all of these. So really, really clear, consistent policy by Europe that we've got to get more of these the clean power into the ground than even a faster pace than we've been doing in the last 10 years.
Thanks, Roshan. I think you can kind of hear that there's obviously that sense of urgency about kind of facilitating this transition, which I guess brings us to the targets that I mentioned earlier and that Europe set. I think it's tempting just to kind of focus on the long term here. We know there are targets set for 2050, for example. That's obviously quite a way in the future, and there's lots of interim targets as well. I was wondering if you could perhaps talk about these and how they actually kind of demonstrate the scale of opportunity for investment in clean power infrastructure here.
Yeah, well, look, let me touch first of all on that geopolitical side of things that I mentioned just a minute ago. Look, Europe wants to continue to reduce its reliance on Russian gas imports. It wants to get them down effectively to zero. We're down to about 19% of all gas imports into Europe is in place today, and we want to phase that out by the end of 2027. So this provides a real opportunity to accelerate the deployment of that self-supplied clean power that I mentioned earlier on. So then if you take a look at, well, what are the targets for clean power? Well, there's already a binding target. So a binding target means effectively it's law. It's a requirement across Europe that at least 42.5% share of renewables is needed in our overall energy mix. In other words, the final consumption of energy in Europe, 42.5% of that has to come from renewables by 2030. So we're standing at about 25% today. So you can just see that the scale of change that's needed in the next 5 years, because it's taken 15, 20 years to get to 25%. And now we need to get to 42.5% in the next 5 years. And that equates to about 70% of all electricity has to come from clean power. So it's not just about deploying fast, it's about where's the capital going to come from. We reckon it needs about 200 billion euros of new private capital per year in order to achieve that build out. So that's about 1 trillion euros on its own between now and 2030. There's also an aspirational target by Europe that it wouldn't just be 42.5%, but actually will go for even more, which is 45%. I'm not sure we're going to meet that, but certainly 42.5% is already that trillion euros. And then you add on to that, and there's an absolute recognition that you're not going to be able to get this new build of clean power onto the grid without investing in the grid itself. So Europe's grid is on average about 40 years old at the distribution level. And it's creaking. It wasn't built for the scale of renewables that you need today. So again, Europe has set out clear policies that it needs about 550 billion euros worth of investment into grid infrastructure between now and 2030. And on top of that, it's also looking at plans to electrify areas. I mentioned earlier on, like transportation and heat and so on. So if you take even just electrification of heat, Europe is saying, look, we've got to put investments in of about another 30 billion euros on top of that. So look, the numbers are just huge. The opportunity is immense. And it's just something that we all just have to get going at and do it at a quicker pace than we've been doing before.
That's right. I mean, as you just said, the opportunity is immense. I think the scale of it is undeniable. I guess kind of to put the old saying out there, like if it was easy to take advantage of that opportunity, everybody would be doing it. And I'm sure, just like any investment space, there are challenges around delivering the right kind of risk-adjusted returns within this European energy transition. Could you just maybe kind of give a sense of things that investors might need to consider, maybe addressing some of these challenges or some of these obstacles that they might face?
Okay, so I think what you have to do is take a look at this at maybe the two stages of the life cycle of a project. The first stage is before it gets operational. So when you're developing and building the project, and then you take a look at it once it's already operational and you're looking to optimize the performance. So as I mentioned earlier on, Nick, we have an in-house team that we actually can both develop and build the projects and then obviously optimize them. So when we look at projects at that planning and development stage, the sort of things we look at on behalf of investors are, first of all, do we actually understand what the resource is going to be for that project. So you do long-term forecasts on things such as the wind or the sun that's going to be available in a particular location for a project. And you have to take into account lots of other factors that might reduce the amount of resource availability at any given time and production level. So that's the first area. And if you're looking at energy storage, for example, you would also have to really get a grips on, well, what's the pattern of usage that's actually going to be used for that battery? How much do we think it's actually going to be called upon, and what sort of revenues is it going to get? And then we get round to, let's look at the actual planning and then the delivery of the projects on time and on budget. And look, I think it's well recognized across the investment landscape that to achieve planning is becoming more and more difficult across all jurisdictions. It's not just in Europe. And that is because with the more build that takes place, there's much more sophistication by many parties in terms of maybe objections. You need to work with communities in order to get your planning permission. You need to understand how to work with local municipalities and so on. So a huge part of that kind of pre-operational phase is getting the right planning, getting the grid connections in place, and getting the projects built on time and on budget. And then you're looking at things such as supply chain availability. So there are certain parts of your supply chain that will be increasingly difficult to get on time, things such as switchgear and transmission systems and so on. And then you also are taking a look at the cost and the inflationary aspects of supply chain. And in Europe, we have some particular areas where we have to be very careful about. So for example, there is an act coming into being called the Net Zero Industrial Act, which is looking for a larger portion of your supply chain to come from within Europe effectively and with low carbon emissions. And that's related to another act called CBAM, Carbon Border Adjustment Mechanism, which is another act that's kicking in 2027, which will actually effectively put levies on things such as steel or cement and so on from outside of Europe. So all of this needs to be taken into account as you're planning the cost of the build program that you're putting in place. And then when you move to the operational phase, it's all around power prices for the generation assets. We're increasingly seeing in Europe areas such as negative hours are increasing. So the percentage of time that you're producing and you're not earning money, in fact, you're losing money, can be anywhere up to 3-4% of a year in certain jurisdictions around Europe. So what you need to do is not only plan for that, but to find mitigations for that. So for example, you can amend your power purchase agreements or put power purchase agreements in place whereby you're still getting paid even when you're producing during those negative hour prices because you're providing green certificates for the off-takers. And you are also looking at availability of grid. That's very important. You want to ensure that your projects are still being able to produce, even during times of high constraint in the grid. I mentioned earlier on that grid's getting quite old in Europe. There are certain parts where it's quite difficult to get those electrons moved from the projects out to where the power is needed. And that's where you can put things such as storage in place alongside your generation projects to hold the electrons for the time when it's needed and then produce at other times. So I think it's there's a whole range of areas. You can see it needs quite a lot of specialism in order to deliver. But I think the main thing the investors need to be thinking about, as I said, is resource, grid, planning, power prices, and are the projects going to be curtailed or not?
Thanks, Rosh. I want to focus on actually one of those areas that you just mentioned, and that's the challenges of the grid. Because I know that when we're talking about this kind of supporting Europe's clean power transition, we're not just talking about investing in clean power generation. We're also talking about investing in infrastructure that supports that clean power generation. And I was wondering if you could just speak to that a little bit more for our listeners.
Yeah, I mean, we actually see this as a real opportunity now when it comes to investing in the energy transition. So as well as generation, there are opportunities to invest in different parts of that sort of support to grid and support to the clean energy transition. So let's think about the different challenges. One, as I mentioned, is that you could have projects that are being what's called curtailed. In other words, they're being asked to shut down at certain times of the day because the grid just can't cope with the amount of electrons that are being produced. And so what you need is what's called firmer grid. You either need to add to the existing grid or you need to put equipment in, such as, for example, grid storage, so that you're holding on to electrons at certain times and then you release them into the grid at other times of the day. So there's real opportunities there. First of all, in investing in grid itself. And what we're finding in Europe now, I mentioned earlier on, it's over 550 billion euros needed to be invested in grid between now and 2030. Look, the traditional grid transmission operators don't have all the capital to do that. And so you are beginning to see a change in approach in Europe where you're allowing for what's called private wires. In other words, privately owned transmission or distribution wires in certain circumstances, not across the board, but in certain circumstances. And that's where private capital can help step in order to invest in the grid itself. And in addition to that, there's a recognition that if we put more storage in for longer duration, it's called long duration energy storage. If we put those in for maybe 8 hours plus around different areas in Europe, you can also manage to manage that sort of level of curtailment. And again, real opportunities for private capital to get involved there. And then the other area of grid I'd like to mention is the volatility of power associated with large energy users. People keep pointing to data centers. Yes, that's one area, but there are other large energy users too, that if they suddenly said, actually, I need demand and suddenly I don't, that puts a lot of volatility onto the grid. And there are technologies that you can invest in to support the grid during those periods of volatility. You have things such as synchronous condensers that can support grid inertia. And again, different parts of grid forming inverters, or what you call energy storage with inverters, which can help stabilize grid after disturbances and provide the type of supports that are needed to keep voltage and inertia within safe limits. So look, a lot of technical talk there. I think what I'm trying to say is the opportunities are immense. It's either to help more electrons get through or to manage the volatility of usage of power through various investment thematics.
Excellent. Thanks, Rocha. Look, we've covered a lot of ground, and I think we've kind of quite comprehensively established the opportunity and some of the challenges involved in Europe's clean power transition. Just to kind of change gears a little bit for our kind of final question, I'm just wondering, what's one misconception that you might hear about kind of Europe's clean power transition?
Good question. I think one misconception that I come across a lot when I'm sitting in the back of a taxi and the taxi driver asks me, tell me all about this clean power, is that there's a misconception that clean power is more expensive than other forms of power. And particularly if you add on the costs of all this grid that I just talked about, actually, that's not the case when it comes to Europe. Even if you were to add in the cost of system-wide reinforcements that I mentioned, which, by the way, you have to do anyway, regardless of the type of power that you're adding into the grid into Europe, it's very clear, the research shows consistently, that once you take into account the fact that once a solar project's built or a wind project is built, the resource is free. You're not buying gas, you're not buying oil or coal. And then if you look over the full lifetime of that project, actually, in almost all scenarios, clean power continues to be the least cost source of power.
Wonderful. Well, Rocha, thank you so much for your time today. Been really great talking. And yeah, thank you very, very much.
It's a pleasure.
As a reminder, this podcast is intended for investment professionals only and shouldn't be shared with a non-professional audience. The views expressed in this podcast are those of L&G's Asset Management Division as at the date of publication. This podcast is for informational purposes only and we're not soliciting any action based on it. The information discusses general market, economic or political issues or industry or sector trends. It does not constitute research or investment, legal or tax advice. It is not recommendation or advertisement to buy or sell securities or pursue a particular investment strategy. energy. Assumptions, opinions, and estimates are provided for illustrative purposes only. There is no guarantee that any forecast made will come to pass. No party shall have any right of action against LNG in relation to the accuracy or completeness of the information contained in this podcast. Where this podcast contains third-party information, the accuracy or completeness of such information cannot be guaranteed, and we accept no responsibility or liability in respect of such information. Not for distribution to any person in any jurisdiction where such distribution would be contrary to local law or regulations. Copyright 2025. Legal and General Investment Management Limited is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. Unless otherwise stated, references herein to LNG, we and us are meant to capture the global conglomerate that includes, in the European Economic Area, LGIM Managers Europe Limited, authorised and regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland as a UCITS management company pursuant to European Communities Undertaking for Collective Investment in Transferable Securities Regulations 2011 as amended, and as an Alternative Investment Fund Manager pursuant to the European Union Alternative Investment Fund Managers Regulations 2013 as amended. In the USA, Legal and General Investment Management America, Inc., a US SEC regulated investment advisor. In Japan, Legal and General Investment Management Japan, KK, a Japan FSA registered investment management company. In Hong Kong, issued by Legal and General Investment Management Asia Limited, which is licensed by the Securities and Futures Commission. And in Singapore, issued by LGIM Singapore Pte Limited, company registration number 20223187 6W, which is regulated by the Monetary Authority of Singapore. For full terms and conditions, please visit our website. To find more content, you can check us out on LinkedIn or on our website.